The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go ahead and get started. Thank you so much for being here. I want to start by introducing myself, and that actually requires me to make a correction. In your booklets, my name is listed as Liesl McClintock, but as of 2 weeks ago, it's actually Liesl Cressman. My husband and I, thank you. My husband and I got married June 9th. He's sitting right over there, so hey, honey. He didn't know I was going to do that to him. Sorry. But he's already being super supportive of me being here. We got in on Tuesday night and drove up from Corpus Christi, which is an 8-hour drive, up here on Wednesday. So thank you, dear. I am currently the Latin and Spanish teacher at Annapolis Christian Academy in Corpus Christi, Texas. I also had the great blessing of attending and graduating from Rockbridge Academy in Millersville, Maryland, which many of you are probably familiar with. So I've been both a student and a teacher at classical Christian schools. I also want to give a huge shout out to my mother, who's also here. She taught the entire time that I was at Rockbridge. She's been teaching there for 17 years, but she's been teaching for 31 years in total. So she's been working really hard, and she's been an amazing part of why I'm here and why I'm speaking here today. So thanks, Mom. Love you. So today, we're going to talk about culture. That's kind of a hot-button word right now. It's a big topic. Be it organizational culture, school culture, church culture, American culture, you name it, if you put culture on the title, it will probably sell. So what does culture look like in classical Christian school settings? I'm going to break it down for you today into three segments. First, we're going to start by defining culture and what it really does in a school setting. Then we're going to talk about different types of school cultures and the ideal culture that we should strive for in our schools. And for that part, I'll be referencing your handout, so hopefully we'll have them all by then. Finally, I'm going to conclude with practical steps for improving school culture from the perspective of the board, the administration, and finally, the teachers. So we're talking about culture, which I definitely think is a sore subject, because when you talk about the culture of a school, you're really talking about the heart of the school. And when you go to critique the culture of a school, it can feel like you're attacking the school altogether. But before we get ahead of ourselves, talking about how to improve culture, we need to actually define what it is. What is culture? What do you think of when I say culture? When I say culture, I don't mean the mission statement or what we say our school is about. It isn't the nice things that we advertise or the slogans that we print on admissions packets. That's marketing, not culture. Culture is what happens at school when no one is watching. Culture is the default that determines how employees will operate. It's their autopilot. Other ways to look at culture are what distinguishes us from them, the way we do things around here, or the unwritten rules that might seem unusual to new employees. However, there are two particular aspects of any culture that can make it really difficult to change. First, we are often unaware of our school cultures. Just like a fish in water, we do not see the cultures that define our organizations. Like Big Brother, he kind of sits behind the scenes, watching our every move and making sure that we act according to his rules. We can't see it, but it controls our actions daily. Anyone here ever been a new teacher? Obvious, I know. Remember those first few months when you were trying really hard to fit in? Do you remember when the systems of the school seemed odd? By now, you probably have adapted to the rhythms, but do you remember when it all seemed rather clunky? when you were constantly asking why they did things the way that they did? Or do you remember conversations with new colleagues pointing out unusual things at the school, and they seemed like they didn't know what you were talking about? Or they would answer, "Yeah, I guess we do that around here. Funny, I never thought of it that way." That is culture. The unwritten rules hiding behind the scenes that we often can't see unless someone openly points them out to us. Second, and the biggest aspect of culture that makes it so difficult to change, is that it doesn't want to. I know it sounds funny, but culture always seeks to maintain itself. It will do everything in its power to keep the status quo. Now, I know we occasionally have those difficult classes. We still love them, but let's be honest, they can really start to get your goat a little bit. But have you ever had a time when a really new, bright student was coming into a difficult class? And you really, really hoped that that sweet kid would improve the spirit of your class. How'd that work out? I had this happen in two different classes this year. One was a sixth grade Latin class and another a 10th grade Spanish class. Both fairly boisterous and lively groups. All great kids, just together they were kind of a bear. Now, there were some sweet new kids who came into both of these grades. In sixth grade, it was a new boy and girl, very sweet, respectful, put together, whole nine yards. In 10th grade, there was this absolutely beautiful girl, inside and out, fun, energetic, bright, genuinely engaging to be around. You know what happened to all of them? Did they improve the culture of those classes? Nope. You know what did happen? About 3 months into the year, they had succumbed to the negative habits of their classmates. They were always sweet and mostly respectful with me, but their overall demeanor was more nonchalant. They were sloppier in their work. They talked a little more than they should. That's culture working. That's culture trying to maintain the status quo. The good kids didn't bring the culture up. The pre-existing culture brought the good ones down. Now, if you think that it's odd that I'm personifying culture in this way, hear me out. What I want to impress upon you is that culture is a living, breathing entity. It is not simply another characteristic of your schools like the paint color on the walls. Culture is a very palpable force in all of our schools, and I want us to take that seriously. Now that we have defined culture, what sort of culture should we strive for? This is probably fairly easy for all of you to picture in your minds. Maybe you imagine kids that actually turn in work on time. Or maybe you dream of no parent-teacher conferences because every parent is 100% committed to the mission of the school. Or maybe you imagine staff meetings where things actually get done. Sorry, my headmaster's here, I shouldn't say that. But in all seriousness, I want to picture what your ideal would be. Because honestly, what should Christians strive for if not the ideal? You have that picture? Now, I want you to think of what actually happens in your schools on a day-to-day basis. Is it like your ideal? If so, that's absolutely wonderful. I am so happy for you. You might not need to be here, but I hope you stay around and are encouraged by what I have to say nonetheless. However, for many of you, maybe what you face every day is not your ideal, and that's probably why you're here. So now I'm going to show you six different types of cultures in school so that you can identify which culture you have at your particular school. So you're going to need your handouts at this point, so go ahead and pull them out. And at this point, I also want to recommend a book to you. It's called School Culture Rewired. It's got this kind of hip-happening cover going on here. It's by Stevert Grunert, I think is how you say the last name, and Todd Whitaker. I can show this to you later if you want to get the publication information. But the survey that you are about to take and a lot of the inspiration for this speech came from this book directly, so I highly encourage you to pick it up. It will give you a lot more details and guidance than even I am able to do so in this talk. So now onto the surveys, and bear with me because there are some detailed instructions, but we're all teachers, right? So we know how to listen to instructions. So On each row, as you see, there are different characteristics that I have labeled. Each row is going to need to add up to 10 points, okay? So if you see the little blank to the side of each statement, you need to put a number in there between 0 and 10. So I'm looking at the one that says risk-taking, and let's say teachers are constantly looking for new ideas is the last option, okay? If I think that that happens in my school 100% of the time, I'm going to put a 10 there, but everything else would need to be a 0 then, okay? So I'm assuming you can do basic math there. Everything in each row needs to add up to 10. You'll just need to go through and do this, and once every blank is filled in, when you get to the, very last page, you see it says column 1, column 2, column 3, column 4, etc. You're going to total all of the numbers from each column going vertically. And when you get the biggest number, you're going to circle that number for me, and we will talk about what that signifies here in a little bit. Everybody understand the instructions? Cool. Okay, go for it. Okay. I think I'm going to go ahead and move on for the sake of time, if that's okay with everybody. But feel free to keep working if you need to. Now, notice that I have only labeled the columns numbers 1 through 6. This is very intentional, because I didn't want to reveal to you yet what each column was. Each column corresponds with a type of culture that Grunert and Whitaker outlined in their book. So look at the column that had the highest total score at the bottom, and that is the culture that is most characteristic of your school. I'll start with number 1. So, if you got the highest score in column number 1, you have a toxic school culture. Now, don't panic, okay? Almost all the cultures that we will be talking about need some sort of improvement, so don't get disheartened. The first step to recovery is acknowledging the problem. A toxic culture could best be described as the antithesis of an ideal school culture. Teachers have pretty much given up, so they do little more than assign readings and pass out handouts and sit at their desk head in hands. Teachers humiliate students openly. There is a lot of gossip and strife among teachers, and there is no open communication between teachers and administration. Administration is almost seen as an inhibitor to good education. There aren't any avenues for dealing with problems, so everyone just sits around and stews on their problems with the school. Now, if you were surprised that you ended up with a toxic culture on the survey, that's not entirely unusual. Oftentimes, teachers and administrators have a hard time recognizing when they have a toxic culture because it has become so much the norm. Low expectations are the standard, and teachers take advantage of a toxic culture that can be used as an excuse for poor performance. If your highest score was in column 2, you have a fragmented culture, and that's exactly what it sounds like. In a fragmented culture, everyone pretty much just does his own thing. Another way to think of it might be silos. Teachers do not collaborate with each other, so students' learning is disjointed. Teachers don't care to work with others, so no one ends up improving their teaching performance. Administration sits on another level without engaging teachers and hides behind the scenes without much real involvement. Column 3 pertains to a balkanized culture. This culture is similar to a fragmented culture, except while a fragmented culture divides individuals, a balkanized culture divides groups. This is really just the adult version of high school cliques. Okay? There are in-groups and there are out-groups. Those groups that are bigger and more powerful often know it and can leverage that power to gang up on smaller groups and get their way. Column 4 corresponds to a contrived collegial culture. Contrived collegial. Now, do not mistake what I'm about to say to mean that leaders should not have clear and high expectations of their staff. Any leader that wants to improve the culture at a school must do just that, often with a lot of pushback. However, the problem with a contrived collegial culture is that the leaders determine how staff are to behave without any sort of collaboration or feedback. It's a very my way or the highway type of vibe. Teachers will smile and do what they are told on the outside in order to comply with the rules and keep their jobs. But all the while underneath, they are seething with anger and frustration at how they are being micromanaged. In this type of culture, teacher autonomy is largely taken away, and teachers get a lot better at smiling and nodding rather than improving their teaching practice. Now, this is not to say that this type of culture inherently comes from a very dictatorial leader. This is actually often the result of administrators that are overeager and seek to improve culture too quickly. Adjustments in culture take time, and forcing relationships and procedures to happen prematurely can feel very contrived. Cultural change will need to happen slowly if it is to feel natural. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if the greatest number of you in here were in column 5, because that is the most common type. Comfortable, collaborative. The best word to describe this culture is nice. Not great, just nice. Everyone's nice to each other, and everyone does a nice job, but at its core, it doesn't feel like much progress is being made. The most important thing in this culture is that everyone is happy. So no one wants to give feedback or criticism for fear of hurting someone else's feelings. Teachers and administrators don't ask essential questions for the improvement of the school, so everyone keeps on doing their own things, smiling all the way. That's not to say that being nice isn't important. We all know that it is. But if quality is being sacrificed on the altar of cordiality, maybe we need to reevaluate the direction we're heading in. Finally, column 6 is the collaborative culture. This is the nirvana of all school cultures. And if your highest score was in column 1, you have pretty much a school culture, so congrats to you. And for this section, I liked Gruner and Whitaker's description so much that I decided to quote straight from the text. They said that a collaborative culture is one where teachers share strong educational values, work together to pursue professional development opportunities, and are committed to improving their work. They are curious about teaching and learning. For the most part, their discussions focus on student achievement, and they spend time observing each other to critically analyze teaching methods. School leaders in a collaborative culture are adamant about challenging ineffective teaching practices while at the same time encouraging teachers' individual development. Doesn't that sound wonderful? This is the ideal. This is where real student learning happens and where relationships flourish. Don't we all want that? And that is what we are going to finish out the rest of our time here today with, discussing how we achieve that type of culture. But I also want to add a little something else in here about the types of school culture that we should have. The title of this talk, after all, is Cultivating Joy. So I want to give you a small case for joy. I fear that in classical schools, we can be so focused on truth that we forget about actually enjoying the process of learning. After all, shouldn't growing and maturing and learning bring more joy? That doesn't always mean that it will be easy or fun, but there should be great joy in becoming more like Christ and learning more about his world. So I get scared when I look at classical Christian schools that seem very regimented and stoic, because I wonder what picture of God that paints for the students. I'm sure we can all agree that joy is important, but do we actually share that joy with our kids? Or do we just hide behind a militaristic set of rules? See, if we have the truth about God and man, then we should be incredibly joyful and excited to be a part of his people and to share that good news with the world. What picture does it paint when we call ourselves Christian schools that are working hard for God, but there is not a smile to be found in the building? I submit to you that we will do a poor job of witnessing to our students and to the world if there is no joy found in your school halls. So we've talked about what culture is. We've talked about different types of culture and the type of culture that we should strive for. So finally, we're going to discuss how we can create that culture. As you can see, according to your outline, I'm going to break down improving culture by the board, the administration, and the teachers. But I want to start with some overarching principles that are the basis for this change. Can you think of what they might be? Look back at the first five culture types and see what all lacked that the collaborative culture had. Do you think you can think of it? Vulnerability and communication. Just like communication is the basis of any good romantic relationship, it is also the basis of any good school. Now, I know it's hard to talk about vulnerability, especially when it comes to a professional work environment, but it is absolutely essential to the proper functioning of an organization. This does not mean that everyone needs to be bleeding hearts, going around wearing their every emotion on their sleeve, but it does mean that there needs to be room for conversations about struggles as well as successes, and that honest dialogue is not shut down. The second that vulnerability and communication are shut down is the moment when you start to drift back to a toxic culture. None of the things that I'm about to tell you will make any difference if you cannot discuss the good things and the bad things about your school honestly and have real, hard conversations about what you will do to change them. It simply starts with someone being willing to take a risk and address the elephant in the room, to ask the question that everyone is thinking, but everyone is too afraid to ask. Could that person be you? Once you have vulnerability and communication in place, that is when you begin to implement some of the things that I'm about to tell you. And I want to start with a charge. I want to start with a charge to the board members and administrators here, because culture really does trickle from the top down. You are about to march into a battle, a cultural battle that will determine whether your school culture will reflect Christ or if you will succumb to the ways of this world. You cannot cower on the sidelines. You cannot blame the culture of your school on your location, on not raising enough money, or a lack of parent support. It starts with you. You must be at the front lines leading your school into battle. However you came to classical Christian education, you are all here because you wanted better education for your children and because you believe that the best education is the one that submits everything to Christ. This is completely countercultural, but we cannot be satisfied with the half-baked truths that the world would give us. Nothing less than excellence will do for our Lord and Savior. It will be a long, hard battle. So you need to count the cost now, and you cannot turn back. Cultural change can only happen in a large part if the people at the top are willing to make the sacrifices to make positive changes happen. This isn't to say that teachers are off the hook then. We all know that's not true. But the attitudes that the teachers bring with them into their classrooms and greet their students with every day are largely based on the relationships that they have with their colleagues and the support that they feel from the top. If a teacher doesn't feel supported, she will take that anxiety and sadness with her into the classroom, and it will rub off negatively on her kids, even if she has a wonderful class. However, if a teacher knows deep in her bones that her administration has her back and will help her face any issues that she may come across, she will carry that optimism and excitement with her into the classroom, even if she has the most difficult class. So I want to start with the boards. I don't know how many board members we have here today, but I want to start with y'all first because I feel like we don't spend quite enough time talking about what the board of a classical Christian school should look like. I want to give you two things to work on. First, and it sounds basic, but please, please, please be involved. Now, this is not to say that you take over the headmaster's job. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm always concerned when boards lead schools and yet they are never to be seen on the school campus. I just wonder how you know what's really going on and how best to direct the school if you aren't walking the hallways with the kids on a fairly regular basis. My husband and I love gardening, so I'm about to give you a series of gardening analogies. And honestly, I can't think of a better way to picture our kids than beautiful plants growing and flourishing into what God has created them to be. What if you have a garden, but you have a caretaker, and your caretaker comes to you one day and says that the plants are dying? So you say, they probably need more water. Go water them more. So the caretaker goes out and waters the plants, comes back, they're still dying, goes out, waters, they're still dying, goes out, waters, still dying. What have you just done there? You've prescribed a solution without really looking at the problem. How did you know the plants needed water? There are a million reasons that the plants could be dying. Not enough sunlight, not sufficient nutrients in the soil, some sort of weird fungus growing on them, or bugs coming and just butting away at those little things. You don't know unless you actually go and look yourself. It's the same with boards. You won't know what the real problem is and therefore how to fix the problem if you aren't committed to being present in the halls when the real grunt work happens. So please, make it a point to visit maybe even once a month or once every couple months so that you will really be a part of the school community. Second, never be afraid to pump the brakes. What does this mean? Now I'm going to tell you a little threat for all classical Christian schools that's lurking in the corners and hiding in the shadows. It's often portrayed as a really good thing, but it can become an idol and trip up everything that you have worked for if you do not put it in its proper place. Do you know what it is? Growth. The temptation to get bigger and have more students and raise more money and build bigger buildings and have more programs, which are all really good things. But you cannot let growth control you because it will enslave you to its ever-increasing demands. And trust me, she is a hard mistress. I want to go to another gardening analogy here. Growth is usually portrayed as a good thing, right? But I guess that would depend a lot on what you're growing, wouldn't it? Let's say you have mangoes. Just came from the Caribbean. I got mangoes on the mind. They're awesome. We want big, juicy mangoes. Okay, so if you're growing mangoes, you really want them to grow, right? It's an awesome thing. Make nice smoothies. It's awesome. But what if you have weeds? Is growing weeds a good thing? Not so much. We want to grow good things, beautiful flowers and tasty crops. So what is your job, board? Make sure you are growing good things. Take time to analyze, to see if you have weeds or actually good food, and be willing to stop to take time to deal with the weeds so that when you do grow, you'll be growing beautiful plants. There will not truly be joy in your school until you acknowledge that you have weeds and begin to pull them out so that the good crops can grow and flourish. And I know this is hard to hear, but I honestly believe that God often calls us to stay small, to display his power, to trust him for the power and the ability to do his work. God hasn't called us to be huge. He's called us to be faithful. Faithful in the little things. Remember that God chose Israel because they were small, and believe that he who chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong will surely be with you even when you are small in numbers. So I believe in the little schools and the small places that are working faithfully unto the Lord with what they have. Continue being faithful. So boards, never be afraid to pump the brakes to say we need to continue being faithful where we are without trying to build an empire, to truly wait on God's timing to make sure that you are not just growing, but growing good things for God's glory. Administrators, you're next. Administrators, you are the vision casters. You dream big dreams and get people excited about going on journeys with you. You have a lot to do when it comes to changing culture. You often get to frame for the school what the culture should look like. And you have two weapons that I have given you for the task. The first weapon is offensive, praise. You have the ability to publicly point out and reward the types of behavior that will be acceptable at your school. And this can be something formal and informal. You have many formal opportunities to praise good behavior, and I like to call these leverage points. Points throughout the year where you get to redirect, change where we're going a little bit, make sure we're all on the right track. These are occasions like the first day of school, school competitions, performances, special events, and awards days that allow you to very openly recognize those who have met or exceeded your expectations. Take full advantage of these. Of course, this doesn't just have to happen on awards days. This can also happen in the halls when you see a student go out of their way to help someone out, or if you hear that a group did particularly well on a presentation, or if a teacher has gone above and beyond in improving a certain aspect of the curriculum. All it takes is a little extra time and intentionality to affirm what those people have done and to set up a wonderful example to the rest of the school body about what is the ideal. Never withhold praise from those who deserve it. Your second weapon is a defensive weapon, protection. While you get to hold up what is ideal for your school, you also need to delineate what will not be accepted. You need to think of yourselves as the gatekeepers, and you need to take your job very seriously, both with faculty and students. And this, I think, is the hardest job of all, and I do not envy you, because enrollment quotas are a real thing, and it can be hard to wait on the right teacher when you have 2 weeks left in the summer. But please do not cave into this temptation. There will be plenty of wonderful students and teachers who are not right for your school. You have a mission statement, and you must stay true to that mission. You have a demographic that you are catering to, and you need to stick with that. You can't please everyone, and you shouldn't try to. You are protecting your vineyard, and you cannot let any little foxes run in, no matter how pretty they are. They can do irreparable damage to the culture that you are trying to create. And there will be no true joy if you have little rascals running around through your vineyard and tearing everything up. You won't give the plants a safe place to grow and flourish. Remember that story I gave earlier on about the great new kids coming into the more difficult classes? Remember how they did not raise up the other kids, but how the kids brought the good ones down? That is exactly what will happen if you let even one mission inappropriate teacher or student come into your school. They will poison the well and bring your culture down. They might not even be malicious, they might not do it intentionally, but your culture will begin to change. It will start with one, and then soon staying on mission will look a little less appealing when that enrollment is paying the bills. But a few years down the line, you will look at your school and wonder what happened because you will not recognize it. You will have given in to the pull of the secular world, and you will see it in the diminished quality of the students that you will graduate each year. The same thing goes for hiring new teachers. I'm going to say something radical here. I would rather you not offer the class for even a year, or even teach it yourself, than have you hire a teacher that is not a good fit for the school. Trust me, the effect that a bad teacher can have on a school in just a year can be irreparable, or at least very difficult to rewire. And you don't have time for that. It's a lot easier and better in the long run to hold out for someone who is the right fit and will actually train your students in the way that you want them to go. Teachers, it's your turn. Don't think you were going to get off the hook. Now, I'm a teacher, and I know how it goes. Maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but I think one of our favorite things to do is maybe complain about student problems. Johnny can never turn his work in on time. Susie cannot be still in class. And oh my word, why can't Timmy get this very simple concept? And I get it. A little bit of camaraderie and commiseration is good for the soul. But what is all the complaining for? Are you just complaining to get it off your chest, but then not doing anything about it? One of the biggest problems that I see with teachers when it comes to improving school culture is that teachers will be upset with student performance, but never get together to talk about how they will deal with it as a faculty body. So make sure that you are actually student-centered and focus on student achievement. That's not to say that what the student wants is the law of the land all of a sudden, but what are we here to do if not to produce wonderful students who serve God? We kind of wouldn't have a school without them. You can't just be focused on getting lesson plans in on time or finishing that massive stack of grading or finishing a unit on time. Student achievement and development have to be the center of what we do. So we need to take some concerted time to thoroughly address students' concerns when they come up and not simply be satisfied with getting it off our chests and then moving on. Second, always, always, always leave room for mistakes. I know that we are striving for excellence. I adamantly insist on this. And we want students to get the right answers and believe the truth. But it has to be okay to get things wrong in your class, or else your class will feel like a prison. And students will feel like they can never truly express themselves. Students need to know that it is okay to mess up. It isn't okay to keep messing up once you've been corrected, but they need to feel the freedom to communicate where they are actually at before they can actually get where they're supposed to go. This will bring so much joy to the classroom when they feel that they can actually breathe, that they are still allowed to live and express their ideas in school without fearing that they will be shunned because of their opinions. I fear that in classical Christian education, we focus so much on truth that we deprive the students of getting there on their own. You can't force a conversion. And you can't force a student to accept truth that is not ready for it. All you can do is be an opening, listening ear for their struggles and thoughts and gently nudge them in the right direction as they go through the journey that God has planned out for them. So make sure your classroom is a, wait for it, safe space, to use another hot button word, to make sure that students feel free to express their opinions and let it be a true place where students can embark on a journey for truth. Finally, leave room for wonder. It seems that we can get so caught up in teaching information that we forget to leave time to really let the students sit back and bask in the wonder of all that God has created and all that man has been able to do because we are created in his image. But a true education will only happen when students have set aside time to think deeply about what they have learned, to connect it to other subjects that they are learning, and to simply sit back and contemplate how the new things that they have learned fit into their larger paradigm for life. God is awesome, and he is wonderful, and he has created man to marvel at his beauty, majesty, and power. And we will only serve our students well when we teach them how to and give them built-in time to sit before their Lord and marvel at all that he has done. So, in conclusion, I want to leave you with a few final thoughts. First, I want to encourage you that changing culture takes time. Maybe you, like me, are always super excited and inspired to go back to your schools right away and implement everything that you have learned during this conference. And that's awesome. I hope you do. But please realize that just because you implement these things that I have talked about or anyone else at this conference has talked about does not mean that change will happen overnight. Just like I mentioned back when I was explaining a contrived collegial culture, you cannot force cultural change to happen right away. I want to credit my upper school principal, Ty Hensley, for this next analogy. I was interviewing him for a master's project on people who are agents of change in schools. He described cultural change as trying to turn a large ship. You see, when you want to change the direction that a ship is going, you have to turn the wheel very slowly, so that the rudder has time to adjust and can turn the rest of the ship. However, if you try to jerk the wheel and force it to turn super quickly, you'll make the ship capsize. The rudder doesn't have time to fully turn the ship, so it just turns over. And that's what you'll do if you try to make it happen too quickly. So don't be disheartened if you implement these things and you don't see change right away. That's okay. That's normal. So don't give up doing these good things. Second, do you remember what I said was one of the basic characteristics of culture back at the beginning? I said that culture doesn't like to change. And I gave you some negative examples of that. But the same applies for good culture, too. Good culture is just as unwilling to change as bad culture. So if you can effectively create good culture in your school, it will be more likely to stick. That's not to say that it can never revert back to a toxic culture, so don't get lazy. But a good culture, once solidified, is just as hard to change as bad culture. Finally, please realize that even the small things that you do now can have an eternal impact. Maybe you're here and you're a teacher and you feel like you can't affect any positive change because you're not an administrator or a board member. Please dispel yourself of that lie right away. You can have an immense impact on your school, even if you can't change how the handbook is written. Even making the choice to change how you view your students and how you relate to your students to make sure that they are flourishing in your classroom can reframe how they learn and give them a picture of what real education should look like. For those of you who were here last year, just like Matt Whitling said, you're raising up the next generation to be leaders and maybe even to come back in a few years and teach in your own schools. You don't know the impact that your actions could have. Even the small changes can make a significant impact, and when submitted to the Lordship of Christ, can make an internal difference that will touch a student's heart for the better. Thank you. I'll be around for questions afterward if anyone wants to come up and talk with me. So, thank you.